Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the weekend closing of the Damage Report. Today's Friday, big day, big hearing day, as we're gonna get to. But when I say we, I mean, of course, not just me, but also Jared Jackson.
Oh, what do you know? You wouldn't think this would happen on one of these days.
It's a Friday.
I saw your tweets, I saw your Instagram messages, I saw your concerns that I wasn't here on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I came back just for you guys. Yeah. And I have an announcement today, since announcements are going around at TYT.
I didn't know you had an announcement.
Like to announce the specifically and first of all to the TDR audience, I will be running this entire weekend after my 7-year-old kid from a birthday party to a baseball game. Mm-hmm. I'll be running like crazy, man.
You know what? I wish you the best in your run because that kid's fast.
I don't know. Very athletic. I don't know if I'm going to win, but I'm definitely going
to
run.
Yeah, I think eventually you'll drop to the ground. But anyway, so look, we're going to be talking about the impeachment inquiry. Really interesting stuff there. We had not only this hearing going on about potential impeachable offenses, but during the hearing we had new potential impeachable offenses. So that's going to be fun. We've got Laura Ingraham's new defense of Trump that she appears to have stolen from Simpsons, which is not that shocking because, as South Park noticed a long time ago, Simpsons did everything. So, but we've got AOC dunking on Dave Rubin. We've got Rudy Giuliani facing new investigations. But most importantly, not really, my investigation of the manipulation of the New York Times bestsellers list. Who is manipulating those rankings and who is not? Who deserves shame and who deserves credit, actually?
This kind of original reporting from John Iadarola is one of those things where you go, this had to have been pointed out by someone else at some point because it's so obvious to look into this.
Well, the beginning has, but no one has like looked over a long span of time.
It seems crazy that no one else has.
And So this is just the beginning. I'm going to be talking about this for far longer than anyone, including JR, wishes that I would. Okay, I was attacked by Brett viciously yesterday for talking about this too much. But anyway, with all of that, why don't we start off with something that's arguably more important, which is the ongoing impeachment inquiry. Today, drama in Congress with Marie Yovanovitch testifying about the damage that she's seen done to the State Department under Donald Trump. It was very emotional, and I'm not just saying that. People on Fox News are saying that, but I want to give you a little bit of an idea of what was going on. If you haven't really been following this, what is her deal? Well, she was the target of Rudy Giuliani-led attacks, falsely accusing her of, among other things, working to thwart Trump's Ukraine policy and being close to the previous Ukrainian president. That smear campaign ultimately led to her unceremonious dismissal months before her time was up. And because of how that went, it became a big part of this ongoing scandal. Now, some of what Marie said includes, I still find it difficult to comprehend that foreign and private interests were able to undermine US interests in this way. These events should concern everyone in this room. If our chief representative is kneecapped, it limits our effectiveness to safeguard the vital national security interests of the United States. And sort of broadening her scope a little bit, she said, as foreign service professionals are being denigrated and undermined, the institution is also being degraded. This will soon cause real harm if it hasn't already. The State Department is being hollowed out from within at a competitive and complex time on the world stage. This is not a time to undercut our diplomats.
So when I read through that, some of her testimony, she was saying that the first thing, and maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but the first thing I think of is what could possibly be the response to this to try to either downgrade it or eliminate it or say maybe it's just a false testimony, which a lot of conservatives, of course, that's their only objective here. Mm-hmm. So the first thought that always comes, and this is a very easily played card, is, oh, she's a disgruntled former employee.
Yeah.
So to say that this particular diplomat being kneecapped would hurt our relations with foreign countries, or that the denigration of our State Department and all of our institutions actually hurts us in the broader field with international relations. When that's the basis for why she's saying this, you have to dispute that before you call her a disgruntled employee. You can say that flippantly, disgruntled employee. And so the next question, I feel like I always say this, the next question, the follow-up should be, so why do you think so? Mm-hmm. What is it that she said that you think is made up? Has he been denigrating our State Department? Has he been denigrating all of our institutions, our law enforcement, our federal law enforcement officials?
Yeah.
Has he been doing that? Yes or no? That's a factual answer to the question. And the answer, of course, is yes, he has. So, and then after you honestly answer that, then ask yourself, does that hurt us internationally?
Yeah.
Ask any expert, they'll tell you that it does.
Yeah, implicit in the statement that you just said was that experts matter. and they don't necessarily agree. And they also don't think that these organizations have any value outside of their ability to serve a right-wing president. Like the Foreign Service, the FBI, the DOJ, those are not institutions with long-standing traditions, some of them terrible, but a mission that they're supposed to uphold to serve the US government and the US people and not solely the president, but they don't agree with that. They think that they're there to serve Donald Trump and that's it.
So I'm just saying, if anyone else, because we know FBI and CIA has done things secretly and covertly, and people have issues with them throughout our history. And if people would have brought up and said, "Hey, we need to eliminate that organization," or "Can you believe that they're not representing the American people? They're coming after certain ones," which they have in the past. Mm-hmm. These same types of folks would say, "How dare you denigrate our institutions because you agree with what they were doing in those moments?"
Exactly.
So it can't be based off of whether or not you want it to fit your narrative.
I agree. Now, as I pointed out, her initial testimony was fairly well received. JR is saying, how exactly do you simply, you know, dismiss what she said? It might be a little bit hard, even for some people at Fox News. Chris Wallace, who has said some reasonable stuff on impeachment and sometimes has been very deferential to the president, he had this to say about today's testimony.
I think that if you are not moved, and we'll have to wait and see what happens in the cross-examination, but if you are not moved by the testimony of Marie Yovanovitch today, you don't have a pulse. This is a woman who had served in 7 posts for presidents of both parties over more than 30 years, hardship posts, places like Somalia, like Tashkent. And she tells a story of being a leading fighter against corruption in Ukraine.
So the funny thing to do on Twitter immediately was to mash up him saying that if you're not moved by this, then you don't have a pulse or a soul or whatever, with all the right wingers who are tweeting out like, "Oh, ho hum, boring. Why is she getting so emotional and everything?" But yeah, so as we've already alluded to, I mean, she has served in some capacity in our diplomatic service for more than 3 decades under, I believe, 7 presidents, sometimes Republicans, sometimes Democrats. The idea that you would be a career professional in this area is incomprehensible to the right. They don't think that there are people who simply care about our foreign policy and not in a way that's specifically tied to a president or an ideology. So they can't look at her and understand. They have to say she's just there to be anti-Trump. That for some reason she started 3 decades ago working through multiple different dangerous parts of the world so that someday she could oppose a Republican president. And she kept her powder dry under multiple Republican presidents. But that's what they believe.
It doesn't have to make sense as long as it's fiery and there's a huge opposition and call her something that that would basically say she's against the entire institution of the United States. Mm-hmm. Because that's the way it works. That's only if you can only grasp at they're out to get me, only me.
Yeah.
Throughout history, it doesn't make much sense.
Here's the thing, though. Apparently, they were out to get her, and so we're about to get that fiery section you were just asking for. The testimony of Marie Yovanovitch today involved a couple of different indications that she was being either intimidated or threatened by the president. One in the past, and one in real time as the testimony was going on. So the first has to do with the just released today a transcript or summary, at least, of the call with President Zelensky from, I believe, April. And there were a couple of standout points. One was where Donald Trump went on at length about how Miss Universe is awesome. But the second was this, where he says on her, "Well, she's going to go through some things," which is literally dialogue from The Sopranos. But that's what he said. That seems kind of threatening when the president is saying to a foreign leader that this diplomat is going to go through some things. And so she was asked to respond to that.
What did you think when President Trump told President Zelensky and you read that you were going to go through some things?
I didn't know what to think, but I was very concerned.
What were you concerned about?
She's going to go through some things. It didn't sound good. It sounded like a threat.
Did you feel threatened?
I did.
And of course you would. Like, JR, if you happen to see my phone and I had texted a Brett, JR, he's gonna go through some things. Wouldn't you be like, "Wait, I thought I knew John. What is this about?" But if it's the president,
yes,
with all of the threatening that he's done to his political opponents, to members of the media, self-perceived critics of his.
If any job, if you have a superior supervisor, boss, whatever, that says, "Hey, he's gonna go through some things," you happen to find out that they've said that about you, you start looking over your shoulder. When are the things gonna come?
Yeah, exactly.
That's how human nature works, especially and then when you're in a position where you're in the government and it's the president is the guy who's talking about it. A president who we know is retaliatory and likes to have enemies.
Yeah. Now the thing is, this should be a big story. I don't think that the call is interesting in many different ways, but this is one of the ways that it's interesting. Excuse me. And so that should be big news. But one thing that might push it out of the news cycle is the fact that it's hard to focus on Trump's sort of implicit threats against her in April when we have his implicit threats against her 95 minutes ago. Because while she was testifying, he began tweeting, attacking her record, implying that she was responsible for Somalia's chaos or something like that. And so he's doing this, multiple different like tweets about her. It's brought up in real time, in the room, and she's asked to respond to it. But as this is going on, many people are recognizing that Donald Trump, who is a guy who loves intimidating witnesses, appears to be doing that in real time. Here is Brett Baer acknowledging that.
This whole hearing turned on a dime when the president tweeted about her real time. And during the questioning, Adam Schiff stopped the Democratic questioning to read the president's tweet to her and get her response. Now that enabled Schiff to then characterize that tweet as intimidating the witness or tampering with the witness, which is a crime, adding essentially an article of impeachment real time as this hearing is going on.
And I don't know for sure how serious this comment was, but Eric Swalwell said this will be considered obstruction of justice in this case.
Hey, again, it's impossible to defend a president that continues to implicate himself. I think Bill Clinton called in the CNN or one of those, they said this morning, I didn't actually hear it, but they said he basically, his advice to Trump was stop talking and say you're doing your work and actually stay away from it so you can have at least this look. And it was actually good advice because as you already have your foot soldiers out in the streets lying for you, you can't continue to be the one to undercut their lying.
Yeah,
by
yeah,
continuing
to help
prove
you
the opposition's point every 5 minutes.
Exactly. And that it's crazy that he would do this, but he does have his defenders. So even as he's doing this, and Brett Baer is acknowledging that it's probably an impeachable offense itself to be intimidating witnesses in real time on social media. Other people on Fox and others tried to defend him. Fox News senior Capitol Hill producer said, now, when we look at the US Constitution and look at Article 2, Section 4, it doesn't say anything about witness intimidation. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a serious professional producer who doesn't seem to understand that just because we're talking about ways that he might have violated stipulations in the Constitution, that doesn't mean that we ignore all other federal law. That still applies. But that sounds dumb. That's not the dumbest defense. That honor or dishonor goes to Representative Jim Jordan, who said that the tweet can't be witness intimidation because the witness wouldn't have known about it in real time if the other party didn't tell the witness about it. So really, it's the Democratic representative who read the tweet who committed witness intimidation.
Jim Jordan is as dumb as he looks. So if that's your defense, it doesn't matter. You read it out loud, so therefore she's not intimidated. Now it's Adam Schiff who's intimidating her by reading the statement from the president. Again, all that is admitting this would be witness intimidation if it weren't for that. So you're agreeing it was witness intimidation.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just saying the water was carried by someone else.
Exactly, and we don't have time to get into it, but there's also, obviously a lot online, but even amongst elected representatives, Marie Yovanovitch is a woman, and so the clock is ticking until they get into some misogynistic attacks against her. And Lee Zeldin decided to do that, just said that the only reason why Democrats wanted Yovanovitch to testify is, quote, to cry in front of the cameras. And actually, I have to correct you because you're a little bit inaccurate. She didn't actually cry at any time. So you're thinking of Brett Kavanaugh, as many people pointed out.
Hannity also did it last night, too. He said, I'd say apparently she cried, and the Democrats are apparently hoping she will cry again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Does that mean that she's going to do it on cue?
Yeah, if you want to purge US government from people who are overly influenced by their emotions, Brett Kavanaugh is sitting on the Supreme Court literally right now, and he likes beer. Okay, with that, we're going to take a short break. We come back, and Arthur's going to be joining us.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
You've probably heard any number of times while you were growing up that America, success in America, is based on merit. But is that actually the case? Joining us now to break it down is professor at Yale Law School and author of The Meritocracy Trap, Daniel Markovitz. Welcome to The Damage Report.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you here. So tell me about this book. You're looking into the idea that America is a meritocracy. What are some of your main takeaways?
Great. So, you know, meritocracy, as you said in your intro, sounds like common sense. It's hard to disagree with the thought that people should get ahead based on their own accomplishments, not, say, on their parents' social class. The idea of the book is that meritocracy isn't actually working in that way, that it's created a kind of a competition that even when everybody plays by the rules, only the rich can win. So the problem behind all the inequality that we have in the country today isn't that we have too little meritocracy, it's that we have too much. The book's view is that the system is rigged and that meritocracy itself is the culprit.
So that's obviously very interesting. And it seems like to state that you work hard, you get ahead, that's the thing that people say. It seems like there would be any number of ways to look into the actual data to show whether that's true. And so I'm curious, the people who are spreading this, are they referencing actual historical data showing, you know, connections between educational achievement and things like that? Or is there good evidence that shows that, in fact, you have a lot of effects of your family, generational wealth, and related things like that?
So the really striking thing about the situation we've got ourselves in is that both are true at the same time. It's both true that people get ahead based on educational achievement, and that you have these incredible connections between family and wealth. And the reason why is that the rich in America today buy schooling for their children in a quantity and with intensity that nobody else can match. So that what you have is rich kids get the most intensive, most expensive, and most effective education. And then if you compete based on achievement, the rest of us who don't have that kind of education can't compete, and it's not our fault. It's a structural thing that rich schools just train their students in ways that nobody else can keep up with.
You know, and obviously, I think a lot of people are going to look at this and say, well, look, clearly there's a huge amount of income inequality, like people at the lower end are being left behind. But you also point out that this myth of meritocracy, it's not even good for the rich as well, right?
No, it's not. So let's just first of all focus on the first part. You know, if you look at the Forbes 20 top private schools in America right now, they spend something like $75,000 per student per year on educating their kids, compared to a national average in public schools of $12,000 to $15,000. And you can see how if you go to a school that spends a fifth as much as these other fancy private schools, you're not going to get the same education, and that's bad for you. But on the other hand, if you're one of the kids in these fancy private schools, all of that money, it benefits you, but it also like tries to squeeze as much education into you as possible. You have to have tutors, you get extra homework, you're constantly tested, there's pressure everywhere. And that's not good for you as a person either.
Mm-hmm. So you've laid out in this book this idea that I'm sure different people would define what American meritocracy is like in slightly different ways, but clearly there are major issues with it. Do you have a suggestion or any suggestions for a replacement for this myth, a better way to think about success in America, what actually increases your odds of doing well? Is there a replacement for that myth?
Yeah, look, I think the traditional strategy that progressives have tried to do is to double down on meritocracy, to have better and fairer tests, better ways of picking who gets ahead. And I think that system is going to fail. The right way to do it is to reduce absolutely the difference between the training that rich people get and that everybody else gets. To force these elite public schools to have elite private schools to have many, many more students, to admit more middle class and working class kids, and to make the elite less elite. And there are easy policy ways to force them to do that. But the most important thing to understand is that when outcomes get big enough, when differences in outcomes get big enough, equality of opportunity is impossible. And the idea that we can legitimate vast inequalities of outcomes by a fair competition is a myth.
Okay. The book is The Meritocracy Trap, How America's Foundational Myth Feeds Inequality, Dismantles the Middle Class, and Devours the Elite. Daniel Markovits, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Hey, it's been a real pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, lots more to get to. Every couple of weeks, there's a new right-wing book that comes out and immediately shoots into the New York Times top sellers list. And you know, as an outsider, it's always seemed weird that this movement that's so anti-intellectual, hates the very concept of reading, they do sell a lot of books. And it turns out there's a reason for that, and it's lying and gaming the system. And so I want to break down my findings from looking back over a year of the New York Times bestsellers list. The reason this came up, by the way, is because Don Jr. has his new book Triggered. And I read on Twitter his father saying, "Wow, was just told that my son's book Triggered is number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Congratulations, Don." And he actually remembered his name. So it's good day for Don Jr. And you know what? Elder Donald isn't exactly wrong. If you look at the New York Times bestseller list, Triggered actually debuted at number one. But see, hold on that for a second, because you not only see that it's new, that the name is Triggered, and that really unfortunate picture of Don Jr. that they actually settled for the cover of the book.
I was just thinking that.
Why does he look so sad? But you also see something else. Do you see above that buy button, that little symbol? What's that symbol all about?
Jesus endorsed.
No, it's not a cross, it's actually a dagger. And that's interesting. So the New York Times puts those daggers on only a select few books, and there's a reason for it. Institutional, special interest, group, or bulk purchases, if and when they're included, such bulk purchases, appear with a dagger. And what that means is when they, and the New York Times, the way they put all this together is they have connections with a whole bunch of different bookstores and they analyze sales, and that's how they generate the list. When there's suspicious patterns of sales, they will mark it with a dagger. And what that generally means is rather than a whole bunch of people coming in and buying the book because they're interested in it, instead, huge quantities of books are bought at the exact same time in a bulk purchase. Generally, that is not indicative of consumer interest. Usually, it means that a think tank, a super PAC, an individual, a wealthy donor are buying up books to artificially inflate the numbers. Or, and you've probably seen this, Don Jr. himself is emailing people saying, "Hey, if you get on this list or whatever, I'll send you a hand signed version of this." So he's bought up a bunch too. And what that actually led me to do is to look back and say, you know, who else has this dagger? It's one thing to say Don Jr. has it, but is this a common thing? Is everyone doing this? And I was not able to find anyone that had gone through and actually accrued this information. So I took it upon myself to go back week by week by week through about 12 or 13 months of the New York Times bestseller list. And I have here all of the ones who had a dagger. And we're gonna go through and we're gonna see if we can divine a sort of pattern. So this is going back in time week by week, so you'll understand. The week before, Dan Bongino had his book exonerated, new on the New York Times bestseller list in number 12. But unfortunately, he got there because of bulk purchases. And I expect that he probably won't even be there next week, but that was his debut. Janine Pirro's Radicals, Resistance, and Revenge has been on the list for 4 weeks, all four of them, thanks to bulk purchases, because she had a dagger for every week. And by the way, just to jump ahead, about a year ago, her previous book, that also had daggers for every week. It was like 13 weeks that bulk purchases had kept it on the New York Times bestseller list. Mark Levin, Unfreedom of the Press, I don't know if bulk purchasing to scam the New York Times is an example of that unfreedom, but he's doing it, and he's done it for 4 months straight. Every week, bulk purchases are keeping Mark Levin's book. And by the way, I went back, his previous book also there because of bulk purchasing. We've got Andrew McCarthy's Ball of Collusion. You can probably get what that book's all about. That's there thanks to bulk purchasing. And here's the thing, there's a couple of interesting patterns here. So that book by Andrew McCarthy was at number 9, thanks to bulk purchasing. That was the only week that it was actually on the list. The next week, apparently the bulk purchasing stopped. So it fell off and he wasn't on the list anymore. And so you might say, well, what's the point then? Well, there is a point, because I went to his Twitter account and he gets to say for the rest of his life, best-selling author Andrew McCarthy. Yeah, sort of, kind of you were, but not in the way that people actually think that means that actually means something. But there's more going back. Molly Hemingway and Carrie Severino, conservative authors on Brett Kavanaugh, Justice on Trial. You guys should be put on trial for gaming the system. And then you also have not just the people who get onto the list thanks to this, but theoretically, they're all taking a spot for someone who actually should be there. Now, sometimes these are small authors who might have made it to number 10, number 9 for weeks where there's multiple daggers. But sometimes even at the top. So not that long ago, a few months back, Howard Stern comes out with his new book, Howard Stern Comes Again. Great title. He's at number 1, no dagger. But he only stays at number 1 for 1 week, because the next week, Mark Levin's book comes out and replaces him with a dagger. Howard Stern would never get back to number 1 because Mark Levin was taking it artificially. Now look, it's not like Howard Stern needs the help. Dude's wealthier than God, he'll be just fine. But based on actual consumer interest, he should have been there.
Because the reason for this bestseller list in the first place is to let people know who haven't been following what good books are out. Which good books are out? What's everyone interested in? If you're gonna go to the movies and you ask them, hey, so how was the new Joker movie? Because I keep hearing about it, but I don't want to go waste my money if it's no good.
Yeah.
So you want an endorsement. So there's an endorsement from which is supposed to be a nonpartisan source to let you know this is what the general public is interested in reading right now.
They want it.
So you're supposed to go, oh man, Triggered must be a good book.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people are reading it and buying it, right?
We may never know, because apparently nobody's actually going to read it. Imagine if Joker was number 1 box office week after week after week, and you kept going into theaters, sold out theaters, but no one was there. The tickets have been bought, but nobody shows up. What would that tell you about the actual power of Joker as a cultural force?
Yeah.
But we would know that, that would be obvious. But with this book thing, everybody thinks that right-winger books sell. That's what sells. But as I'm going back, and I just did a year, it's almost all right-wing pundits. I'm gonna show you some more. And by the way, I'm also gonna point out the right-wingers who didn't do this, because there are a few. So first of all, you might think, oh, Ben Shapiro, intellectual gladiator, free speech guy, super popular amongst the young, right? Maybe, we don't know, at least when it comes to his books, because his book, The Right Side of History, 6 weeks in, was still doing bulk purchases to stay there. And just so you're sure, let's go to the next graphic. On its debut week, it was also being bulk purchased. So he was number 1, I guess, kind of. Who knows? Did anyone read that book? We have no idea. And so you had him with The Right Side of History. You got Mostly Sunny by Janice Dean of Fox and Friends. She was on the list for 2 weeks. And she also claims to be a best-selling author thanks to that. You've got Corey Lewandowski's book. That was a lie on the list at number 11, only thanks to bulk purchasing. So here's the thing, there's a few others. Jason Chaffetz's book, bulk purchasing. Glenn Beck's book was only on the list for 1 week, even with the bulk purchasing. That's sad, Glenn, that's really sad. Dinesh D'Souza, Death of a Nation, 3 weeks, yeah. 3 daggers. Michael Savage, only for 1 week, and only at number 11, and only because of bulk purchasing. But here's the thing, not everyone is doing this. So I assumed when I started this that I was gonna catch the biggest fish. That's Bill O'Reilly and Tucker Carlson, whose books always are bestsellers, right? Mm. Well, I went through, no daggers. They were on the list for 12 weeks, 14 weeks. They made number 1, by the way, both of them, when those last books started, they did not use these daggers. And so you can sell these books hypothetically, but for people like these Fox News personalities, for Ben Shapiro, it's all a pack of lies.
Yeah, the objective is to get those daggers for those other groups. For these other guys who, even though they can have deplorable points of view or skewed approaches to their books, like, you know, the Bill O'Reillys and the Tucker Carlsons of the world, at least there's enough people who want to read the skewed and ridiculous things they have to say. It doesn't change that, but at least there's people that are willing to do that.
Yeah.
More power to those people to spend their money on those books. Like I've always said, I don't care what people do with mm-hmm. their money. I don't really care. Do it. It's just a matter of being honest about about the readership of your books.
Because yeah.
then after that, what happens? The speaker fees go up. You now get invited to things. So it's
you also sell more books.
Yeah. Yeah, you sell
because
more books
on the list.
Because there's this false sense of this must be a good book. People buy it and it collects dust on yeah. the shelf because they're like, man, this first chapter was garbage.
Yeah, and by the way, they weren't the only ones. Brian Kilmeade's book didn't have a dagger, so it is possible. But here's the thing, as I'm going back through this, these were not the only books that had daggers. There's like 10 others. We're mostly non-political books. So this YouTuber named Matt Best had a dagger. Ben Folds of Ben Folds 5 daggers all the way through. For some reason, Gary Sinise, the actor, had daggers. Howard Schultz, by the way, he's one of the political ones, not on the right, that had daggers. There's a book, Thirst, which is by the leader of Charity Water, that nonprofit. Used daggers to get on there, probably through that organization, actually. Here's the thing, other than the ones I've named, there's like maybe 5 for the entire year. I'm not exaggerating. You can go back and you can check it yourself. It is almost entirely right-wing political books that are getting these daggers. Left-wingers, by the way, if there was a single one, I would have listed it. There isn't. Preet Bharara's on there without it. Any number of different political commentators and pundits, if they make it on the list, they make it because people are actually buying their books. If you don't like that, if that's inconvenient for me to point out, then you can go back through this yourself and you can find it. And it's not to say that nobody's buying the books, but clearly the system is being gamed. And the idea that now we believe as a country that this is actually popular stuff, that people give a damn what Mark Levin says or what Ben Shapiro says, when the only way they can make it on these lists is by gaming the system. And coincidentally, on other lists where you can't do that, things like Amazon, they almost always score much lower in terms of their ranking. I think that we need to acknowledge this as a country. The New York Times need to do a better job of weeding out artificially boosted sales.
Yeah, it's a small indication. And also, but to give some credit to Don Jr., at least now with this newfound book deal, or success with his new books. His next two books have already been slated. It's Faster Than the Speed of Love and Wish It, Want It, Do It. Next two coming out for Jimmy. They're gonna be top sellers.
That's something, but I don't remember the reference. Anyway, so look, we gotta take a break. We come back a little bit more on the right-wing defense of Donald Trump during the impeachment hearing after this. From the beginning of this Ukraine scandal, the defense of Donald Trump has been shifting fast from there was nothing wrong at all to gradually we're getting closer to like, yeah, just bribe people, it's fine. We're not quite there, we're like an inch away. Take a look at Laura Ingraham's defense of Trump last night.
Of course, Nancy, it's in the Constitution, we can read, okay? President may be impeached for bribery, treason, or high crimes and misdemeanors. But even assuming the Democrats' strained and ridiculous interpretation of the facts, and I do not assume them, but just for the sake of their argument, attempted bribery isn't in the Constitution. Remember, Ukraine got its military aid. It was 14 days delayed, big deal. And remember, Ukraine never made any public statement about any investigation. And the fellow on the other end of the call, Zelensky, said he didn't feel pressured at all. He didn't even know aid was frozen to his country until weeks later. So the call, in his words, was normal.
The issue with responding to that is a lot of what she said is a knowing lie. The idea that he didn't know that it was only delayed for 14 days, those are just lies. And like, we're supposed to pretend that we do this show from the left, she does her show from the right, we disagree. No, she's a liar. She's willing to lie to her audience. But all those lies given, it's just attempted bribery. I know that that's not literally what she's saying, but she's prepping her audience for, well, as long as it was stopped at the last second, then we're good.
That's been the talking point. We talked about how Jim Jordan was saying the witness intimidation that Trump was doing. Hey, well, it wouldn't have been witness intimidation if you didn't tell the witness that he was intimidating on Twitter to millions of people. So this is an ongoing line with them. Hey, as long as I can say it, he didn't fulfill. He's too dumb to do it. He's not organized enough to do it. He just tried. Oh, he just says things like that. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Hey, again. So if you attempted murder, I'm never probably gonna get to that.
Yeah.
Attempted murder. So yeah, you know, I just stabbed the guy in the stomach and slit his arms open, hoping he'd bleed out. But he survived. Man, that's a tough guy.
Yeah.
So I should be off the hook, right?
Yeah. No. If you ever find yourself having robbed a bank and you've got the big bag of money with like a money symbol on it, and you're about to leave the bank, stop for a second and think about it. Because at that point, if you just give the money back, you're good. It's fine. If you've got like your gun to someone's head and the cops come bursting in, just lower the gun. You're good. No jail time for you. It's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous that the Simpsons already did it. As many people pointed out, Sideshow Bob, when he was in jail, once said, convicted of a crime I didn't even commit. Ha, attempted murder? Now honestly, what is that? Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry? Do they? The Simpsons did it. Okay, that's what's going on. But that's the defense. It's two-pronged. One, all these crimes are fine, we don't even care if they happen. And then on the other side, you have people like Ben Shapiro saying he's too dumb to commit crimes. If I was Donald Trump, I would be very, very offended, not by the legal attacks against me, but by the legal defenses offered by my allies.
It's a shame, but it's all they got. As you mentioned, if Simpsons did it, this is a cartoon defense. We're living in the middle of cartoon characters running the country.
Yeah, and by the way, just a sort of related story. We did a live video about this before the show began, JR and I. So as of today, the breaking news was that Roger Stone has now been found guilty of 7 different counts, including witness intimidation and lying to Congress, mainly lying to Congress. So you now have an additional person in Donald Trump's orbit. Now, if the people around you, your confidants, your longtime allies, your advisors and things like that, your lawyer, for instance, are committing crimes, that doesn't necessarily make you a criminal. But at some point, factor that into your analysis. If you're Laura Ingraham and you're literally being driven to the point of saying that attempted bribery is fine, imagine if it was Barack Obama and all of these people circling him were going down one after the other, but somehow Donald Trump was slipping through without any sort of legal consequences. At some point, you really have to factor that into your analysis of this.
Well, I mean, all the investigations that went into Hillary Clinton, of course, came up again when she was running for president, because like, look at all these things that implicated things about her, that surrounded her, that swirled around her. Yeah. Let's not trust her because we saw the potential. If your associates are this many bad guys, I think you can assume that this guy likes to associate with bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. And really fast, I just want to turn to a happy story for just 1 minute. I was on Twitter, and generally being on Twitter is a bad thing for you, but I found a happy spot in Twitter yesterday, and it was thanks to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So Dave Rubin decided to launch this attack against AOC, tweeting at her this screenshot of an email that says Ocasio-Cortez and Sanders announced the Green New Deal for Public Housing Act. And he says to her, hi AOC, not sure who you bought my email from, but I assure you I didn't sign up for your mailing list. Also, you offer no way to unsubscribe. Please release me. To which she responded, this is the official congressional press list, not a supporter mailing list. Our apologies, as someone must have mistaken you for a journalist. That'll be fixed right away. Which is brutal.
You eventually have to realize that you don't win in these situations.
He thought he had her. Like, oh, you put me on your list, which is a thing that happens. I get emails from like people who are candidates that I've never even Googled before. I don't know how I ended up there. But that response, I mean, I couldn't tell you how many people responded with the gif of the stop, he's already dead, Sanders. But anyway, look, to tell you that people liked it, even for us to say that we liked it, that's an obvious. I love a good burn, and AOC is literally the best in the business. But it's when she wins over people who don't even like her. So there was one tweet, random person that I saw that I liked that said, man AOC, I think your policies are useless and damn near evil, but that was a solid roast, GG. That's good, I appreciate that. And then by the way, if that isn't good enough, that set off literally hours of Dave Rubin tweeting things to try to prove that he didn't mind. Like how happy he was, like he tweeted a photo of the steak he was eating. He was like, I'm fine, I'm leading a good life. I got steak.
Go back and watch a few of his lines from his interview with Don Jr. And if you wanna find out how deeply disappointing he is to anyone he ever represented, whoever supported him.
Yeah, I thought about covering that, but honestly, I feel really uncomfortable Just look at what he said to Don Jr. yesterday. Yeah. It's not my place to step in and to comment on it really, but it's about as embarrassing as political commentary can get. So you Google that, that'll be your fun homework. But anyway, good job AOC, thank you. We're gonna take a short break. We come back a little bit more to close out the show. You might have read insider reports from people who know Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani that there is whispering about possibly throwing someone under the bus to get him under this impeachment pressure he's facing. Rudy Giuliani seems like one of the most likely people for that, but supposedly he's not worried. He was asked whether he was concerned that Trump would throw him under the bus, and he laughed and said, "I'm not, but I do have very, very good insurance. So if he does, all my hospital bills will be paid." And apparently his associate jumped in to say he's joking. So look, I'm assuming he's just playing with the metaphor of being thrown under the bus and not threatening the president that he has info on him.
Can it be both? Playing with the analogy and he's threatening the president. It's like, you know, I have that insurance policy. What does an insurance policy do? It makes sure it protects you in case something bad happens. Mm-hmm. Something bad may happen, which what they asked, will he throw you under the bus? That's an injury. And your claim, I'm gonna file that claim with my insurance company. Well, what about what you did, Don?
Yeah,
it's straightforward. An attorney won't jump in and say he was joking unless that's something where he goes, red flag, sirens are blaring.
Well, and look, it is just speculation, but I mean, he probably does know stuff about that. I mean, they've been friends now for some time, and I will say Rudy Giuliani does seem like, at least at present, a true believer. He seems like he'd be very loyal to Donald Trump at this point. I mean, we already had Sondland sort of flip. Rudy could have done that from at this point, considering all that he knows and all that he was involved in. But supposedly he hasn't done that yet. But the thing is, there's this current ongoing campaign against the president. Clearly, we got the impeachment inquiry. But we're also at the beginnings, apparently, of one against Rudy Giuliani specifically. Three US officials told Bloomberg that investigators are looking at possible campaign finance violations and whether Giuliani failed to register as a foreign agent. One official told the outlet that the investigation into his foreign dealings could also include possible charges related to bribery of foreign officials and conspiracy. Now, it's entirely possible that all of that will turn out to be unfounded. But that is multiple different threads of investigation, multiple different potential crimes. And here's the thing, Rudy Giuliani, he was involved in a really weird endeavor. This like shadow diplomacy team to Ukraine, that's bizarre. There are laws that regulate the diplomatic overtures of the United States. And that's bad for Donald Trump, but it's also potentially bad for the tools that he used to do it.
It's a nightmare. This if you don't want to believe that these guys work like a mob or the mafia, then all the other signs have been pushing it that way anyway. Once they start squealing each other, I mean, Henry Hill is about to go ahead and squeal on Paulie. It's going down. It's like, if I'm gonna have to go to witness protection, Rudy Giuliani in this situation, I will take everyone down with me to avoid getting locked up the way apparently Roger Stone might.
Yeah. Now, what I just read for you, maybe that's not enough, but that's not all. The New York Times previously reported that investigators were looking into whether Giuliani broke any foreign lobbying laws. So you also have that. And then we were already going to do this story. I'd already produced this story. And then breaking news, not the Roger Stone stuff, but what we just flashed right there. Okay, just now bring it up. So this is breaking news as of this morning. Federal prosecutors probed Giuliani's links to Ukrainian energy projects, which is perfect. Because again, like when we claim it's all projection, theoretically we could be wrong, but it is. Remember what Hunter Biden did, what they were so concerned about? That was using your political influence to gain personal money and benefits having to do with energy exploitation in Ukraine. And the whole time that Giuliani is pushing this alternate channel of diplomacy for Donald Trump, he's also trying to personally benefit from energy exploitation in Ukraine.
Because you know, he has this high expertise for Ukrainian energy because Rudy Giuliani's been working in this field for his entire life.
Exactly.
Every time when it comes to sex scandals, when it comes to marital issues, when it comes to bribery, when it comes to anything you do to break the law that Republicans want you to look at, look right back at them.
Yeah.
There was an old comedian back in the 90s, whatever, that said, women are smarter than men as far as like looking at another guy. When guys see a woman, they're like, oh man, just like that meme does. When women want to look at a guy and they're with their dude, they go, oh man, look at him, those are some nice shoes. So both you guys are looking at it and she gets to check the guy out. There was an old comedian that said that, because if you want to get away with it, make make everyone else look at the other way while you commit the dirt.
Interesting.
It's exactly what goes down. This is it's almost too easy to call out now.
I questioned that metaphor at the beginning, but it actually is pretty appropriate.
The next time your girl says, look at that guy's shoes, she's checking out his butt.
What if she says, look at that guy's butt?
And then she's checking out his shoes.
He does have nice shoes. And really fast, by the way, the reason that this last bit is particularly bad for Giuliani is I don't know who can reveal things having to do with him being a foreign agent and all that. Maybe Parnas and Fruman. But definitely on this scheme involving the natural gas, that is a Parnas-Fruman joint right there. So one of them has already said that he's gonna be cooperating with investigators. So if there's documentation, and there probably is, because remember, as corrupt as these people are, they're more incompetent than they are corrupt. If there's something there, it's probably gonna be revealed. And that's bad news.
These things are gonna get way worse.
Yeah. Okay, as always, thank you for joining me this time on a Friday, closing out the week with me.
Yeah.
Thank you everybody for tuning in throughout the week. See you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.